Good morning and welcome, everyone.
Mustang that he's working on.
Today is Thursday, June 22nd, 2017. It is 9 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners, at least Commissioner DeYoung and myself. I think Commissioner Morgan's not feeling well, as am I. So we'll get started. We've got a pretty short agenda here today, and so we'll start out with department business. 1A is transit. Amendment number 2 to ODOT grant agreement number 30110 for transit master plan. A couple other items that Mr. Chancey is here to discuss. Item number 2 is agreement number 31291 between Josephine County and Department of Transportation, Rail, and Public Transit Division for 2017 through 2019, 5311 capital funds. And item number 83 is agreement number 32235 between Josephine County and Department of Transportation, Rail, and Public Transit Division for 2017-18, 5310 capital funds.
So good morning.
Chancey, welcome.
Thank you. I don't know what was going on at ODOT, but all these agreements are supposed to be in effect before July 1, because that's the beginning of the fiscal year, so that's why everything kind of just showed up at one time.
Okay.
So the first item up is the Transit Master Plan. This is an ongoing project. We need to extend the agreement because the work's not going to be done until probably August. There was a little bit of delay.
So you're already started into that. The formation of the plan, the consulting side of it, because this is for the consulting,
yes,
correct?
Yes, this is what we'll end up paying for the consulting company, or Jarrett Walker and Associates, that came and did a presentation for you. I didn't actually need to put this one on the agenda. I could have just had my liaison sign it, but there's just a couple things that I wanted to clear up that I felt needed to be cleared up after the presentation that they gave. The first one up is it's kind of the inherent nature of a consultant to portray something as failing or wrong. Like, they have to come in and fix something. I want to be the first one to say the transit system here is not failing. It's not wrong. If you look at the ridership since we've made the last changes, I mean, it's up 60%. So you can't say that this time transfer stuff doesn't work. I will be the first one to say that there's improvements that can be made. And those improvements will be made. I didn't bring in a consultant to tell me what to do or tell us what to do. That's what I feel I'm here for. I brought them in for their opinion, and they did have some good opinions or some ideas, but that's what I'm looking to them to do, not to tell us what to do. So
I noticed in their presentation there was a couple things in there that I thought, well, this is pretty slam dunk, and yet they had a, you know, for instance, when they had the big grid with the four things, that's why you have a little satellite bus and the thing to take them out to the main.
It's essentially what we do now.
And I thought, I think that's what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
With the transfer system. So
That's exactly what we're doing now. It's not confusing. Once you learn it, they were talking about we're not going to the hospital out of the downtown. That's not true. We go every 30 minutes. So in some of the ridership scenarios in terms of out Rogue River Highway and along Redwood Avenue, we're not correct either. If you look at the way that it was portrayed, it looked like there was no ridership along Redwood Avenue, when in reality we're picking up about 30 to 40 people. It's just there's 7 stops, so that's 14, because there's one on each side of the street. So that's why the ridership looked low. And so there's a few things like that, and one of their suggestions was to go out Ramsey past the hospital. And if you've been on that road, you can probably realize the issues we're going to have driving a 35-foot, 8.5-foot-wide vehicle down that road. So whereas, you know, it's easy to draw lines on a map, when you go out and look and assess the real situation, it might look a little different. So
now do you change your routing to need, or do you kind of just say this is the route and you people need to adjust to that?
That's my approach. If you don't do that, then you end up with routes that do truly go everywhere, really circuitous, that are just winding all around to meet everyone's
needs. This
isn't
a taxi service.
That's exactly right. And what you end up doing is, to appease a few people here and there, you've diluted and made the system worse for everybody as a whole. So we'll get through this process. I'll take their suggestions into consideration, but I just wanted to take an opportunity to kind of clear the record. And what you saw was going on is, yes, that in truth was what was happening.
And this is a requirement from ODOT that you have this transportation plan. every so often?
It's a federal requirement. It's a state requirement. It's a kind of a local requirement because it should be part of the MPO, part of the regional transportation plan. Is it more of a focused section on transit? So those are the reasons why it's in place, and it's supposed to last the entire time, or the planning period is for the entire time that the regional transportation plan is as well. The thing with this is we've never done it. So this plan had never existed until we started it. So we needed to get something in place. Once it's in place, you can update it.
Just looking at the results and what the suggestions were and stuff, I question whether it was worth $97,000 to do it in the first place.
I would agree with that. In all reality, I could have done it myself. The truth of that is I didn't want it to be me. My opinions inflected enough into the system that I felt like I needed to have somebody from the outside come in. Is it a lot of money? Yeah. It is kind of what it is. A lot of these planning projects, I feel the same way about. It's just like, really? We could have done it internally for way cheaper. It's just, it was a time issue, so.
There's different objectives, I think, with having consultants come in. Yours, you know the system really, really well, but for us, having a third party come in and say, yeah, what you guys are doing is really well, these are the things that you could do better, and you saying, well, if we do that, that's what's going to happen. It's just kind of framing the conversation for us, and if it provides a foundation that boards can look back on and say that it isn't just the previous, because you may not be here forever.
Right.
Scott Chancey developing this system. I mean, that I don't know that it's worth $90,000, but it certainly worth something for future boards to come and say, we have a plan, this is how it was developed. For good or bad, these are the questions that came up, and we, you know, explored those different deals. So whether or not boards will actually look to that degree in the future, but they'll be afforded the opportunity through this process. That's one of the things that I'm coming around for consultants is, I think Commissioner DeYoung said it 100 times, you have to ask them specifically what you want them to evaluate and almost lead them to the conclusion you want them to get to. Sometimes they'll get there, and sometimes they'll say, no, your assumptions are not going to get you there.
Right.
So.
And there's a huge public involvement process that's required through this, and that, having this third party, my own peace of mind, is it worth the $92,000? I don't know.
Probably not on the surface, but you know what? In the end run, if somebody says, well, I'm not interested in your ideas, I want somebody with a shingle,
that's
and
exactly
say it's already
right.
done.
That's yeah, exactly
we did
right.
that, we follow through.
Yep.
So.
Great.
So then the next one up is our 5311 funds. These are formula funds that come from the state. They're federal funds, but they come to the state first, and it's for rural transportation. We're urban / we're small urban, but we also operate in rural areas, so out to Cape Junction, the North Commuter Line, and so forth. So we get funding to pay for that. It doesn't fully fund it. But it is what it is. One of the things that it's called capital is because it's not operating. If we used it for operating specifically, our match is 50%. By using it for administrative expense of the program, it's somehow explained as capital, so then the match rate is only 10.27%. So that's why we do that. Essentially, it is operating, but that's how we're classifying it. We do have those expenses, so it's allowed us to get it at that lower rate. So it brings in $84,000 a year at a 10% or 10.27% match rate. So that's that agreement. And as always, if you look through it, there's that ethnic impact statement in those as well. It's probably the last page. There's no disparaging impact on any minority or protected population by us doing this program. So the next one up is the same thing. It's formula funds that come to the county for elderly and disabled transportation projects. We use it for operations. We actually use this amount for preventive maintenance. That way it's classified as capital, and again we get to match it at 10.27% versus 50%. It's the same thing that we do with the City of Grants Pass, where they purchase service from us. Same thing. We're able to do it at a 10.27%. So my whole goal, since we have very little local matches, to do everything I possibly can to get to that lower rate. So that's why all these are configured this way. Truly, I look at everything as operations, but we're classifying it this way.
In the literature, it said that that you had to, in other words, if you were going to do a full overhaul on a vehicle, for instance, that you had to prove that it was going to last for another 5 years. Who does that assessment?
No one. We're supposed to adhere to that. Usually, we're supposed to adhere to it. We do adhere to it. If you buy an engine and it blows up in a year, I'm going to go right back to where we got it from and say, hey, we need to get this taken care of and taken care of correctly. I rely on Josephine County Public Works, the maintenance department, to do all this work, and so they are the ones that...
They're the ones that are making the recommendation.
That's exactly right.
We can replace the engine in this, and that bus will stay in service for 5 more years. We'll get it out of it.
That's exactly right.
Okay, because that's why I was wondering who made that determination.
Right.
And then another thing it said is that all those rules and regulations fall under... Do all, in other words, this doesn't cover your whole maintenance
portfolio.
So, do their rules apply to the whole maintenance program or just to the part they're funding? In other words, if you said, no, I'm going to go ahead and replace that engine out of my own budget, and I'm not going to use this fund for it, do their rules apply?
No, in that specific instance, no, they wouldn't. If I used our own funds somehow and said we're doing it this way, the truth of the reality of the matter is, I think since I've been here, we've only done like a major overhaul on some vehicle like that once, so it doesn't really come up a lot. Typically, if something's breaking at that level within our life cycle of these vehicles, something's wrong with the vehicle when we bought it. So, but. With those rules, yeah, we can kind of get around them, but with that said, there's other rules that apply to the maintenance department, drug and alcohol testing, maintenance intervals, all these other rules apply as well. So it's not just what they're putting on us, it's all the other encompassing agencies that have a say in what we do that get to set those rules as well. So typically, with the life cycle of our vehicle being 5 years, or less, you're not going to see an engine blow up. Like I said, it's only happened once, and when we did it, then I learned a few things. Like, if you put in a new engine in an older vehicle that has like 200,000 miles on it, you're probably going to have to replace the transmission because the engine's going to be too strong for the transmission, which is already worn out. So there's some things like that. So usually when we start to get into those types of things, it's time to get rid of the vehicle. That's the way we approach it. So that's my three grants. These are all 2 year. Oops, sorry. The transit master plan is going to be done. It's a year extension. It'll be done by August.
You guys can handle that one, and we'll move the others to consent.
Yep.
So one's a 1 year, and the other one's a 2.
Both of them, the 5310 and the 5311. No, you're right. Okay. One's a 1 year, and the other one's a 2.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it. Forestry's been excused. They had a conflict, and I wasn't sure I was going to actually make it through this morning, so I let Dave know that he could come back in next week and give an update. He gave an update on the timber sale program, which is really the fundamentals of what he's doing right now. But like I mentioned earlier, I think on Tuesday, we are working really steadily on that ordinance for forest management. So I'd like to interrupt the agenda, go right to other if possible, because Arthur O'Hara isn't here. If you wouldn't mind coming up, Rod, we just kind of want to chat with you a little bit. I think that there's been a concern voice, but I'm sure we all have the welfare of the horses for this weekend's event in mind and in consideration. I know there's things you guys have done in the past to keep the horses cool. You know, they race and they come back and they cool off. So just how are you handling that PR-wise? What can we do to help that? Are there any other considerations that you guys have looked at as far as best practices of moving the race day time to, I don't know, later? It just seems that 1 o'clock is getting right there to that warmest part of the day, and our temperatures aren't supposed to be cool this weekend. So just looking at that consideration. Appreciate you coming in here.
Sure. So let's go through. I know Commissioner DeYoung isn't – I know he's on – the fair as a liaison.
But yeah, he's your guy.
But he probably doesn't know the logistics behind all the racing, so I want to go over that first.
Sure.
We are state regulated by the Racing Commission. and we are have some state funding from the Racing Commission. So you got to understand, it's not really all up to us. It's up to the state at a state level. We have two investigators on grounds. We have two stewards on the grounds.
That's at every race?
Every race. We have a state veterinarian on the ground that is hired by the state to be there. He's there with the horses in the paddock. He's there with the horses when they go clear down to the gate. And he's with the horses on the backside if they need to be. We also have We have two vets on the ground on the backside. So what we do and what the horsemen do is to accommodate all of these concerns is the horsemen use electrolytes in their waters, obviously, to help the horses with dehydration and stuff. We also have water available in the paddock for the horses. We also have misters in the paddock for the horses. We also have buckets of water.
So the paddock is like the staging area next to the grandstands while they're preparing for the race?
Yes.
Yeah, they're getting pretty excited over there, so keep them cool. I've seen that.
We have the misters going in the paddocks. We have several buckets along the pathway between the backside, which is where the stalls are, to the front side, where if a horse gets overheated or needs a drink, there's water available in all of those areas. And then, of course, the paddock has a actual spray down where they spray the horses down also with water to keep them cooled down at the same time.
All these things with the buckets along the backside, are those all required, or are those things that you're doing above and beyond state requirements?
We're doing above and beyond. I mean, the not every racetrack has that. You know, we do that specifically for our racetrack.
Do you do that every race, or just on days when it's going to be over 90?
Mainly on days where it's going to be hot. I mean, we don't take them out of there. If they're out there, we fill them up, you know. So once we have days like this, like we put them out last Sunday, because last Sunday got in the 90s. So we put them out last Sunday.
It was also the first time in the 90s coming off the water.
Yeah. We didn't put them out on Saturday. It was lower 90s or high 80s. We didn't put them out on Sunday. They'll be out this weekend, you know. So we do everything we can to the horses, and we, you know, if the State Racing Commission tells us we can't run because it's too hot, we're not going to run because it's too hot.
Okay.
You know, and so... of course, I could make that decision. You know, I could tell the state we don't want to run because it's too hot.
Yeah. But
really, it's all of us working as a team that makes this decision.
Yeah.
It's not just me or our association that makes this decision. It's everybody that makes this decision. And really, it's probably harder on the people than the horses.
Mm-hmm.
The people... We've done things for them too. We supply waters, we supply fruits to the jockeys. They're the ones that are getting stressed at the same time. We've put air conditioners in the jocks' room so they can stay cool. So between races, they can stay cool. They stay cool with misters. We have misters in the weight room, weight area where the jockeys get their saddles and everything. We have misters there for them. They can stand under them. So we do everything we can to make these horses and the people as comfortable as we can during these hot
people,
days.
What's your response if people say, well, why are they just running at 1 o'clock? Why don't they do a 9 o'clock or like a 7 o'clock?
This is all set in place way before we start.
Sure.
We have a this year is new, too, because we have a simulcasting agency that's internet simulcasting that goes out. Those times are already set. I mean, those times are set. We have areas where, you know, there's probably seven different ADWs that are taking this signal this year. And they already have the post times. They already have when the racers are going.
Yeah.
It would be
a huge deal.
It would be a huge deal to try to change
our... I don't think people always recognize that when they get out of their car and they, you know, walk to the horse track and stuff and they see all their friends and people they know. They don't realize that this is going out all over the place.
Yeah, And we don't have, if we went late into the evening, we don't have lighting for the racetrack.
Oh, that's true.
We can't run at night for the racetrack. And in the mornings is just not a, it's not a good time. We
that
got training.
That would be my next question about your transmitting and your simulcast. You got people that go, if they're going to sports bar or something to bet, they're sitting in air-conditioned comfort, and they don't understand why is the race being moved or canceled.
Right.
What do you mean that race was at 9 o'clock this morning?
Yeah. I'm never watching that again.
I'm not going to do that again, yeah.
You know, so.
So, yeah, I think that's what's going to be my next question, because that is a new wrinkle. That's just this year.
That's
that
just
started?
This year, yeah. Yeah. And we, honestly, this happened to us 2 years ago. 2 years ago, we had probably 5 out of the 9 days that were 100-plus degrees.
Yeah.
And we did the same thing we're doing this year, and we did not have one person, one horse have any kind of heat stroke or any problem with what we did last year. So it's not like this is the first time
yeah,
we've ever done
I,
this.
Yeah, I didn't think
well,
it
I,
was.
I like your state aspect to it, that the state's on board.
Yeah.
They're here.
Yeah, so they can't figure out, what the heck are you doing? You say, whoa, this is above us. This is a state, the Horse Racing Association, statewide.
Yes.
And the vet, we can't do it.
Right.
Well, they have 2 vets.
And they have 2 vets, and then you said you had a couple of them back then. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think it's well covered.
I just think it's important that we, you know, get that information out.
Sure.
So I think, you know, you talked about not being a positive thing if you're not there. But people seeing that it's there, not understanding all the things.
Yeah, people aren't educated enough. They don't understand the whole thing.
Yeah, they just make a quick reactional, you know, conclusion. And
well, you know, when I was in promotion with the motorcycle racing, when our ambulance left, it stopped.
Does the same thing.
What do you mean?
His stops too.
Does the same thing.
I came out to watch this. His stops too. Our ambulance had to leave. There's another one on the way to take its place. But I'm sorry, we're going to just hold up for a few minutes.
Yeah.
Because we've had people hurt, especially when you're on the paddle bikes.
Sure.
You can get kind of beat up pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, we have those same regulations.
The ambulance is actually on site right now. They come in at 7 o'clock in the morning, and they're there.
Through
AMR
training.
Is there through training every single morning.
Okay. Yeah. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
I went out, there's a couple of the events that I've been to that have no ambulance on board, and I go,
yeah.
One of them's a huge summer event that I MC, and I go, hey, where's your ambulance?
Right.
Well, we don't have one. Yeah, you need to bring that on board. It's very, very important.
Yeah.
Well, good. I think it sounds like you got all the bases covered. If anybody comes back and tries to, you know, say, "Well, yeah, well, did the Board of County Commissioners shut that down or whatever?" It puts the county clear out of it.
Right.
Puts it in the hands of people that know what they're doing. First off.
Right.
You know, I don't know the effects of the heat on the horse.
Right.
Well, you guys are in the paper from yesterday, I think, Wednesday. You know, it's just making sure that's out front, and everything you do and everything you say.
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't hurt to put out some sort of a quick little press release about
the
positive things.
Next opportunity.
The hierarchy of decision, how it's, you know, people are looking after the best interest of the jockeys and the horses first. Safety's first for those things, so that's what I would
actually being proactive on that might be the way.
getting out in front of it.
Anytime you have the opportunity to talk to the press.
I started thinking about it when I was coming back into town last weekend, and I saw that the horse racing was, wow, it's really toasty out there.
Yeah.
And then we got an email yesterday that just kind of jogged my memory about, oh, that's right, I wanted to talk about that.
Right.
And then if I'm thinking about it, and I didn't know these answers, and I should, you know, so this is perfect.
Yeah.
The people who are talking on the inner circle, you know, getting that information out would be really helpful.
Okay.
I think just good PR.
Well, we'll see what
all
we
around.
Can do about that. I'll talk about
public awareness of what all you're doing.
About our,
tag. Put him in charge of that.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
That's excellent. His job.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So, well, it sounds really good. I mean, more than a 2006, that's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
So things are going really,
yeah,
really
no,
well.
Yeah, no, things are on the upswing. They definitely are. And
definitely.
And this, you know, the internet wagering. Saturday was like 4,500. Sunday was 13,000, and it could just go from there.
Yeah, it could really catch
on. Really take off.
Yep.
And we have even some more things to add to it next year.
Okay,
we just didn't get them all done this year and stuff like that. So
statewide, how many horse races are there?
There's five fair meets, and then there's the commercial meet, which is at Portland Meadows.
Okay.
So we are the largest fair meet. Most fair meets are only 3 to 4 days. We are a 9-day race meet, so we're the second largest, and then Portland's 37 days, I think, total.
I think the rest of the fair meets are during the fair too.
Not Prineville.
Okay.
But all the other ones, I think, are.
But they're so big, there's no way you can do fair and horse racing at the same time. There's no parking, there's no facilities.
Yeah, I saw it was pretty filled up, you know, even all the way over to the flower building, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That was really impressive to see. Really, really good. So,
Okay,
well, that's it. Just short and sweet. Thank you so much.
All right.
Really appreciate it. And keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Take care of yourself.
What did you do to
your wing? Oh, I tore that tendon out of my shoulder that holds my bicep up. So.
Nice.
Do you need that?
I kind of
need that.
Yeah,
right?
I'm trying to get it fixed right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, good luck. Good to see
you,
Rod.
All right. Bye-bye.
That was Rod Lowe for the record, and Peggy Anderson, our fairgrounds manager. Mr. O'Hare, you're up for the financial report. Item number 3, business update. First item is A, 2017-2019 Intergovernmental Agreement number 153126 with Oregon Health Authority for the financing of community mental health, substance use disorders, and problem gambling services. Also, item number 3B is Intergovernmental Agreement 153161 with Oregon Health Authority, 61, authority to tort liability coverage as provider for Psychiatric Security Review Board.
Okay, thank you. And these two agreements are just the latest iteration, this biennium's version of agreements that have been in place for a number of years with the county. Talking with Sean Martinez with our alcohol and drug program, she gets a small portion of this, about $500,000 or so of these funds, but the rest of them are all passed through to our mental health provider, which is the majority of it is options.
And then the local Alcohol and Drug Prevention Committee makes a recommendation on how to distribute that $500,000 to local
providers also, yes.
Providers?
And talking with Sean, there's about five providers locally that the money is dispersed to. The
treatment programs?
Yeah.
Right, they're all treatment.
Providers?
Yep. Choices.
Correct.
Where does Drug Court come in on that? Is that just...
Drug Court is a different funding source, isn't that through DA?
Yeah, I don't think they can do that. That's just through the DA. It's volunteer. I mean, Judge Baker and stuff, she volunteers time. But there's administrative people, one in the court that's assigned to it, and that's out of the DA's office.
But, I mean, they have requirements and check-in points and things of that sort.
All of those are, everybody in Drug Court has a provider that's their counselor, and that would be like choices.
So that's one of the five
that
we're talking about. So they're assigned or they are accepted by a provider, but they're attached to Drug Court for their record keeping?
They're accepted into Drug Court. You have to apply to get in there to have like a reduction in your sentence or not be incarcerated. And then regardless of whether or not they were in Drug Court or not, they would be assigned a provider if they weren't in jail. So, and that's probably something OHA or in this program probably covers as well. So it's been 2 or 3 years since I was liaison to that, maybe longer, maybe 4 or 5. So I don't.
Well, our county college deal last week was a lot on drugs and things of that sort, health issues.
Yeah.
And it's a huge budget.
I like your idea of taxing and paying for that somehow.
Somehow we have to have
a revenue stream to
directed to the source of the problem.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we're going to be able to get that done, but I think we're...
Well, I've been talking to Greg Walden's in DeFazio's office, and they've got really good people that are wanting to run point on this.
Yeah.
And getting them in touch with you, I can get their information. And just be interesting for you to just float that idea out.
Yeah, when I had my half an hour with Senator Berkeley,
yeah,
he said, well, gee, we just don't know what we can do about that. And I said, well, with all due respect, I'll tell you what you got to do with it. And we had that conversation. He kind of nodded his head, you know.
Yeah.
You just need a separate category for habit-forming drugs. They have to fall in their own category because they aren't just regular old prescription. Gee, I'm going to give you metformin for your type 2 diabetes.
Right, right.
Glyburide or something.
Well, both of these, did you speak on B?
B is a companion agreement. It's just the state providing us, the state providing the county with liability coverage for providing these services. So it's an agreement for us really to accept their coverage.
So both of those seem like continuations of previous agreements, so we'll just
correct
those to consent calendar if that's okay.
The other thing I brought forward is I did have a conversation with a citizen yesterday, Jody Haynes, and regarding the marijuana industry, and she had attended a LIPSC meeting this week or prior week, I guess. And at that meeting, the number kicking around of what state revenue we might receive, the number kicking around in that meeting was $150,000. They were saying that's what the Josephine County might receive. And that was a true statement. That was a number I came up with based on the previous allocation formula that the state had, which was a per capita based on our population and the amount of money that was at that point estimated to be available. The number was $150,000. Since that time, the League of Oregon Cities has come out with an estimate of what the 10% share is going to be as far as the distribution. And the state has said since the distribution will be after July 1st of this year, they're going to follow the more convoluted formula that's in the legislation that is based on number of permits and so much for this permit, so much for that permit. Anyway, the bottom line is that following that other allocation formula and using the more up-to-date numbers of what the actual distribution might be, the Josephine County could or may possibly receive up to around $400,000. So not $150,000, but $400,000. That's good news, I guess, on our part, but based on the however many tens of millions that we actually produce here, $400,000, getting back $400,000 on state tax collection is not very much. Yes, not very much at all. And it doesn't really provide any. You could give it 100% to the sheriff and get, what, two deputies out of that? Seeing as how there are other folks that are contending that some of that ought to come to them,
everybody
wants some of that, a piece of that money, and everybody needs it. I mean, it's all legitimate requests, public health for mental, drug rehab, corrections, DA, everybody, has a claim. So that's not a lot of money that's going to be available, even with that revised.
Well, I think that's I met with two growers from out in the valley. Tuesday, because I went to Fairboard right after that. And they said, I said, we don't get anything. I said, a lot of arrows shot in the air that you just told me what you pay out, but none of them landed in the court you want. So what, and he said, oh, no, it's coming. You're going to see buku. I says, is it going to rival timber receipts that we got before? And he goes, well, it could. And I said, no, I don't know about it could. But we had a really long conversation. In fact, I promised them that I would go out this week. I'm going to go out to their grow because I've never been to a grow site. Well, they are recreational growers. Mm-hmm. And he was explaining to me the nuances between recreational industry and the medical industry. So I definitely had an ear. I had my ear. So
it's an issue.
But at the same time, I said it does not pay the freight. It's almost like the alcohol tax. I said they collected like $495 million in alcohol tax last year, and the county got, what, $700,000 or something?
Oh, not even.
Not even
that? It's closer to two.
It doesn't pan out.
OLCC, yeah.
I said it certainly doesn't pay the resources we have to extend to domestic violence, drunk driving, hit and run.
Does that have to go through LIPSC of where that money is appropriated? Or?
The board, no, you're correct. It does. It is going through LIPSC. LIPSC
they're making a recommendation.
Recommendation to, right. Because the money comes to the county, but they're making a recommendation. The other piece of that is our local 3%. And our local 3%, as you know, we collected $11,000 for the first quarter of this year. That began on January 1 of 17. We collected $11,000 so far for our local 3% tax, so maybe that will grow over time, but still even that would give us, what, $40,000, $50,000 a year in marijuana tax, our 3%, and that, the board, that's the piece that the board, again, asked LIPSC to provide some direction.
No, we delineated in the legislation on the measure of where those four things, and we said we're going to ask LIPSC. I don't remember that we were asking LIPSC.
They're kicking it around.
Well, I don't mind if they kick it around, but I don't think that we actually said that it was public health, and I made sure that we got law enforcement in there because it wasn't, Commissioner Walker was not including law enforcement in the original version, and it's in there. There's like three or four elements that you can appropriate.
That can be appropriate. That is correct. And the allocation, the amount that goes to each one, that's where I think LIPSC was going to weigh in.
That's fine, and we should probably see that as a number that we'd appropriate together because $40,000 doesn't do anything. Really on its own, but if you put it together with 400, then you start talking about adding, two more deputies, maybe a code enforcement person or something like that. Yeah, that's where I
possibly.
See the need is for the public who's being negatively impacted by people who can follow up on making sure that the production and retail is legit and doing the
and
right
they're
thing.
They're following the rules.
We don't have money for enforcement. I mean, all these things are great, all the rules that OLCC puts out and everything. Talked to a guy last night on the phone for 45 minutes. And I said, you need to call OLCC. Well, they don't call me back. I said, call them again and again and again and again. Because when their phone bank is over tripping the breakers because it's too hot, guess what? Maybe somebody up in Salem will look at them.
Yeah.
Because we would have so many people bombarding OLCC about production issues. And bad neighbor issues and all that other stuff that should fall on them because they have the money.
Yeah.
Well, that's what this citizen was talking about, and she was wanting to get to put together some kind of a local forum with the growers to discuss these issues. You know, because there's a lot of legitimate growers, but there's a few bad seeds.
There's a few that are trying to take advantage of an opportunity in a system here that isn't well funded as far as enforcement. But then there are some that are trying to do the right thing. I'm not it's funny when planning gives out these opinions like all recreation is fine because we've never heard any complaint on rec growers anywhere. Well, that doesn't mean that people are satisfied with this going on in their neighborhood just because you haven't heard a complaint. They may not have even ever done anything wrong. But that doesn't mean that they want it growing right next door to them. And so, unfortunately, planning community development is not picking up the nuances of just because they buy permits doesn't mean that that problem goes away in that neighbor's mind. Permit satisfies you. It does not satisfy the neighbor over there. And so, that recreation and RR, come back to that, that's going to be a challenge for 20 some odd growers or whatever, and maybe we have a transition plan or something like that. But I like the idea that what Commissioner Morgan was saying is that's a commercial operation and should not be happening in a residential neighborhood style kind of a place. And so
but I for instance, the two guys that were in to talk to me on Tuesday, they've got a tremendous amount of their own capital. They're not Philip Morris or whatever, but they've got a tremendous amount of their capital invested in their 10 acres, which is our 5. And I said, you get any of your neighbors complaining? They said, nope, we don't have any problem at all. Neighbors are just fine. We've been there for, you know, we've been there for a long time, and now we're legal. And so do you then go back in and shut them down and their whole thing's gone?
I've been thinking about, like, yes, if we were to pick a couple of RRs and I just go out and visit every neighbor around there, it's like, how satisfied?
How are you doing? Are you okay?
How satisfied are you with this? What kind of potential value do you think you lost in all of their equity? You know, everything they have is probably in their house.
Or are you
okay?
And
it's like, well, I was going to sell this and retire after I quit working for whatever, go down to the bay, you know, somewhere. I don't think anybody's going to buy my house.
Right.
So I don't know. You know, there's a balance for sure. And I haven't made a conclusion yet. But certainly leaning in the idea that we've got to get this right. Grandfathering is certainly on the table. But I'm really worried about OLCC saying, OHA Medical saying, well, we want to be grandfathered too. You know, you have to look at this from a policy standpoint of, no, the challenge is you're doing something that is not conducive to an RR. It's not on the agenda to talk today because I don't want Commissioner Morgan to be able to participate in this. But that's the challenge. And, yeah, we've got people who invest in stuff, money out there, but they have to know that there's a certain amount of risk associated with this kind of an investment in the first place. It's federally illegal. And if the, you know, if U.S. Attorney General starts saying, nah, we're not going to do this anymore, or these are the rules from the Fed's perspective. If you're going to have to do it like this, it's going to have to be here. That I think first movers is what we call them in business schools. They always have a certain amount of risk, but the reward is also potentially really, really high. So I hear it, but.
Well, I'm visiting two people too. I said, you know, our problem as just a John Q. citizen, as I heard all the way along, before Measure 9, it's going to take care of it, it's going to replace the timber industry, we're going to pay. And I said, there's a certain amount of, I'll use the U.S. Navy in San Diego, for instance. San Diego puts up with the U.S. Navy and the guys coming in after 6 months out at sea and tearing up bars and getting drunk and chasing girls all over the neighborhood. They do that. They put up with it because the Navy infuses so much money into San Diego. They don't want them to leave, so they're willing to. So the loggers used to come to town on Friday night, tear up G Street, get in fights, drink all the beer, and chase people around. But we were put up with it because they paid for everything. And they're just kind of, okay, you know, the wigwams, yeah, it's smoky around here, but so what? It's paying for everything. And I says, and along comes the cannabis industry with all the promises that you're going to pay for everything. And then because of the way the state laid everything out, we aren't getting anything. So therefore, you really don't have any relevance in my eyes until you come up with something, some way that you can, so that you are actually contributing to the community and its well-being. And you're not doing that right now.
It's funny how people talk about the Illinois Valley and like how well it's doing because of the cannabis industry. And a friend of mine ran for city council 2 years ago in Cave Junction. And we grew up kind of together. He's a little younger than I am. And he started going through a list of all of the businesses that used to exist in Cave Junction, the number of gas stations, the number of grocery stores, all of these other things. And it's like, you think that this is all great because you just got here and these businesses are here. But when the timber industry was running in Josephine County,
right,
the library was paid for. All of these other services.
There was no Josephine County property tax prior to 85. Why? Because the timber industry.
And we're not even close to that with this industry. I've got a conference call in a couple of minutes. We'll have to get going. We have an issue of needing to move the weekly business session just one day to a Thursday next week. Does that work for you?
Yeah, fine.
We have an administrative meeting always on Thursday morning at 9 o'clock. I don't know if we just have that later on in the day. We can figure out exactly when.
It's a little ways
down the road. We can figure out where that needs to go, if it needs to go on Thursday or Friday or something like that, but we'll work it out.
Weekly business session next week, the 28th?
It'll be July 6th.
Oh, July 6th. Okay, yes. Thank you.
Because there's a really good chance I'm not back on the coast. Mm-hmm. I'd have to leave really, really early to get here. And I don't know. We can either move it later in the day or we can move it to Thursday.
It looks like that now, so you write the order. So would you rather do it at 9 or what?
The weekly business session at 9. And maybe we have an admin at 1. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I'm here all day.
Whatever you want.
Well, I'm here all day, so I guess that day, just fine. Anything else?
That's all for me.
That's it. Oh, I don't know. Do I need to mention that I'm going to, I'd like to set up a meeting with the, go to a manager's meeting over at City Hall and discuss the possibility of, since we're taking our break area out here and maybe getting a joint project on the other side of Ambassador?
We've been talking about that for a number of years. Ryan's got a preliminary design on that.
Okay.
He and I have been.
But is it okay if I, is that more
permission? It's totally okay.
To approach their manager's meeting.
Yeah, I think that would be great. You just real clear, you need approval to go to the manager's meeting to work on something that's outside of your liaison. I'm happy with that if you can work out an agreement. Aaron Kiewick and I have been talking about that for some time. When they wanted a site, there was a heating, air conditioning kind of a unit they wanted to put on that footprint, and that's a long-term kind of a deal where you got to figure something else out. So I see that as being a real positive area for all city, county, library employees to be able to go.
On a car lock system to where it's secure.
Yeah, and as low cost as possible. But when we talk about low cost and saving money on infrastructure improvements, those things usually last 20, 30 years. So I think that people maybe it's just me, to be okay with spending a little bit of money on long-term infrastructure that lasts a long time. And there's a positive benefit to taking care of employees and adding those amenities that we in the public sector really don't look at very often. So anyway, that's just me talking to myself, basically. I imagine. Anything else? We're good for the day. We've got a 2:00 today. I think we should just go forward with it. I'm going to probably try to take it easy. I have a conference call for an hour, and then I've got a conference call at 1 to 2. But Moving Mountains is coming in.
I think we ought to hear from them.
Yeah. I've invited Parks and the Fairgrounds and Community Development. Those are the three that made sense to me to start with. And I think Commissioner Morgan's point about our website needs to be a priority. These are people who do that, so they're going to be able to take a look at it from a user standpoint and say, oh, this is atrocious, or you do these things really well. These are the things we can help you with and then move forward. So
I forget whose website I went to the other day, and I was, gosh, it was so easy to maneuver. It was another county. I'll look it up. Mm-hmm.
Deschutes is actually pretty good.
Deschutes, that's exactly who.
Yeah.
It was so easy. Even old dummy here can. The bearded dummy can do it.
Oh. Okay. Well, with nothing further, the board's adjourned at 9:48.